It's Monday, January 4th. Welcome to Market Foolery. I'm Chris Hill. Joining me in studio today from Million Dollar Portfolio, Jason Moser. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
2016.
First Market Foolery of the year.
Yes.
I love being part of something special.
Yes. And it was as if the stock market knew this would be our first Market Foolery of 2016.
Man, that's a tough day. That's a tough open.
There's a lot of red out there. So we do have some news from the automotive industry, from the financial services industry. But let's start with what is going to be the big headline on the evening news for people who watch the evening news, or if you're a dinosaur like me and you actually get a newspaper delivered to your home, what's going to be the headline tomorrow morning? And it's, oh my gosh, there's so much red in the stock market, stock down. You know, I'm looking at a headline, stocks fall 2%, Dow plunges 400 points after China market rout.
It's like that scene in an airplane where they're on the plane and they're like talking about an emergency landing and yada, yada, yada. And the entire cabin's totally calm and everything's cool. And she's like, oh, yes. And we've just run out of coffee. And then everybody just goes,
everybody goes berserk.
Monkey poo. I mean, it just, yeah.
It's a good reminder to just take a deep breath.
Yeah. Listen, let's put some perspective here. I mean, yeah, sure, this is the worst opening day in 84 years. You know what else it is? It's the best market day of 2016 so far.
Right. It's all about your perspective. So before we started taping, our man behind the glass, Dan Boyd, mentioning, and I'm sure this is part of what happened in China, is 10th month in a row manufacturing declining in China. And I think that there are a couple of things that, just to set expectations for this year, if you're expecting China to magically get wonderful, you need to ratchet back that expectation. And as we talked about, I think, on the most recent Motley Fool Money show when we were doing our 2016 preview, if you're expecting the price of oil to magically double in 2016, you might want to pull back on that expectation as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I can see probably with just the general American consumer, you know, working 9 to 5 and has, you know, a million things on their plate to deal with, and they see these headlines and they're like, market's down 2.5-3% because of China, and they probably look at that with that sort of, yeah, I don't get it. Why? Right. What does that mean? I mean, because it is sort of, you look at that and you think, well, why does that matter? And I mean, in today's global economy, I mean, we are more interconnected than ever before. But I mean, by the same token, yeah, you need to look at something like this and say, well, there are plenty of things that are in our control, and there are plenty of things that we have no control over whatsoever. And that's one of them. And you have to think, okay, well, it is what it's going to be. And the way I look at it, you know, this particularly is going to be a very volatile year. It's an election year, a polarizing election, I think, where a lot of people are really worked up. So my expectation is for a very volatile year in general. And as big of a deal as China apparently is today, there's going to be a great headline that comes down the pike here in the next 1 to 2 weeks that'll make people feel a little bit better about things. And again, I mean, I think it's just a matter of being able to sort of take that mentality of investing regularly. You know, I was reading some stuff toward the end of last year, and sort of just looking at it from the perspective of, yes, the market finished ever so slightly down, but it wasn't like it was a wasted year for investors. I mean, if you went in there and just dollar cost averaged your way into an S&P index fund all throughout the year, month in and month out, well, there were some months in there where you got some really good bargains. So then, you know, as an investor, you probably did pretty well. And I think that, you know, that's why we take the long game here, is because you can't do anything about these day-to-day headlines. But in the context of years, these are going to be just little blips on the radar.
One more thing before we get to the company news. You mentioned this is an election year. I was thinking about this over the weekend, and I could be wrong on this, but I think that for investors who are focused on individual companies, I feel like this is a year where you're going to have an even slightly higher advantage, because there's going to be even more attention paid by the media, and not just the regular media, but the business media as well. There'll be plenty in the business media about, well, here's how to play if this person is the nominee for this party and that sort of thing. And I think with even more attention being paid to a presidential election in the United States, that's less attention being paid to companies. And I think it's a slightly greater opportunity for investors.
I think so. I think you're right. I think that typically when there is less attention given to something, you know, particularly when you look at really high quality businesses in the market, you know, those things can kind of skate below, you know, the typical interest levels and can often result in decent deals.
Earnings season kicks off next week, but before that, we do have some news. Let's start with General Motors, which is investing $500 million in Lyft, the ride-sharing company that competes with Uber and, I suppose, taxi cabs. It's part of a the latest round of Lyft's financing is $1 billion. GM's got $500 million of that. This values Lyft at about $5.5 billion, which is roughly one-tenth the size of Uber.
Yeah.
A little bit of a surprise that GM is investing this money in a service that is essentially designed to compete with the likes of General Motors.
I mean, yeah, to an extent. I mean, I think, you know, when you see these kinds of deals, just because a big company does it doesn't necessarily mean it's smart, right? And so, I mean, you look back at some examples here, like Coca-Cola investing in the Keurig cold machine. Well, I think that's proving out to be sort of a bad move. Microsoft and Nokia, that didn't work out so well. Who knows how this will work out? I think it's $500 million. It's kind of a drop in the bucket for GM. I mean, they have a balance sheet with $21 billion plus in cash. But I think it's also a business that has, you know, plenty in the way of challenges as well. And I mean, I don't disagree with this notion of self-driving cars and car riding services like Uber and or Lyft. I mean, I think they compete with GM to a degree, but they also need suppliers, and the suppliers for that industry will be the actual automakers, assuming the automakers can get it right. And that's where I guess I feel like maybe people think this is something that's going to happen really, really soon, and I'm not positive that it is. I feel like we saw there was a lot of hype given to 3D printing not so terribly long ago, and while that's really neat technology and I think has, you know, implications that will play out for many, many years to come, I think it's going to be something that takes a long time to sort of really get there. And I can't help but wonder if self-driving cars don't fall into that category, at least in some level. I mean, we talk about cars today being subject to operator error, and those operators being us, right? We as humans are flawed, and we can make mistakes, and we do, and we have car accidents. But let's not forget that the humans, we are still responsible for the technology that is creating those self-driving cars. And so just looking at it from a practical standpoint here, look at the automobile industry today. In 2014, there were 64 million recalls. In the U.S. alone, 64 million recalls in the auto industry. So, yeah, I mean, I totally trust these guys to make a self-driving car. They didn't gonna run me off the road, get hacked, or catch fire, right? I mean, so that's my biggest hang-up, is that whether the car's self-driving or not self-driving, to me, self-driving seems like it's going to be a little bit of a tougher hurdle to clear. These guys don't have a very good track record of making cars that don't have flaws. And so there are just a lot of people involved with making this whole thing work. I mean, the insurance implications. So I feel like this is a neat headline. It's neat technology. I don't think we're going to get there quite as fast as maybe people think. I wonder why GM wouldn't invest in Uber. I kind of feel like Lyft is going to constantly play second fiddle. I've never used Lyft.
It's certainly a much cheaper valuation, though.
Obviously much. But, I mean, have you ever used Lyft?
No.
Have you used Uber?
No.
Okay. I've used Uber. I've never used Lyft. I mean, I think Uber was wonderful. It definitely serves a wonderful purpose there. So I could see wanting to be a part of that market and investing in something like that and wanting to be sort of a supplier.
You know what? I shouldn't say that. I've used Uber. I don't have it on my phone, so I've been with people who have, you know, had an Uber.
It's going to be something you're not going to need it, though, probably very often, right? As a parent, I mean, as parents, like, we need cars. I mean, I need to be able to get those kids from point A to point B, and we need that freedom, right? And so I think ride sharing is going to play a bigger role in certain markets as opposed to others. But again, I mean, I feel like this self-driving thing, we're maybe kind of putting the cart before the horse a little bit.
Well, and you just touched on something that I think maybe would have been one of the factors in GM's move here, which is, you look at ride-sharing services, Uber and Lyft, they're in urban centers much more than they are in rural centers. You look at where GM is selling their vehicles in the United States, they have a larger footprint in the rural area. So in theory, it's going to be less of a dent on their sales because it's a smaller percentage on the urban side. But to go back to self-driving cars, Consumer Electronics Show starts this week. Our man David Kretzmann and a few other fools are going to be going out to Las Vegas for CES, and one of the events is Ford Motor is expected to announce a joint venture with Google to build Google's self-driving vehicles. Mm-hmm. And if the reports are true, we'll see once the announcement is made. But right now it's looking like this joint venture is going to be a separate legal entity from Ford Motor, presumably in part so they can isolate any liability that comes from that.
Yeah, I would have to believe so. I mean, again, I think you're just looking at, I think, a higher hurdle to clear. And at least with Ford, you know, partnering there with Google, you know, Google has been working on this for quite some time. And you know, who knows how well they feel like they've got it nailed down. So, I mean, again, I kind of fall back to this. Our automakers don't have the best history of making cars that don't need to be recalled. And so, you know, as just a consumer, I mean, I look at that and I think, okay, certainly the burden of proof is on them to prove that they can nail this. And I don't think they're not going to be able to just make that happen. I think it's going to take a lot of iterations, and I think it's going to take some time.
I could see both of these working out. Ford's partnership with Google, just because it's Google.
Yeah.
And simply on valuation, I could see General Motors getting some return on their investment, just because when you look at the disparity between Lyft and Uber, I mean, that's Carl Icahn's theory on Lyft, is that, well, look, it's just a much better value. As an investor, it just represents a better value. It's not to say that Lyft is going to overtake Uber, but just as an investment, Carl Icahn would rather invest in a company that's $5.5 billion as opposed to $60 billion.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, that's just it. With private companies, like, we don't have the luxury necessarily of looking at Uber and Lyft and saying, oh, well, one is extremely overvalued and one is extremely undervalued. We can only go with a limited amount of information. So, you know, we look at those two valuations, and just because I'm more familiar with Uber, and Uber seems to be a bigger company and it certainly earned a higher valuation in the private markets, it doesn't necessarily mean that that's totally correct. I mean, we've seen plenty of those businesses, you know, in the private markets, you know, take those sort of raised downs where they're actually raising money on a lower valuation later on in their life.
Fidelity is dropping two longtime credit card partners. One is Bank of America and the other is American Express. 24 million cards Fidelity has out there. And, I mean, last year it was Amex losing Costco, and now it's Fidelity. And I mean, there's a lot of red out there in the market today, but Amex is down a little bit more than what the market is doing. And this is on top of a 2015 when shares dropped 25%. Is it too strong to say that Amex is reeling right now? Because it's maybe not from a stock perspective, but from a business perspective, it seems like they are reeling a little bit.
I mean, I think it's fair to say. I don't think that from an investor's perspective, I know that you know, one investor may look at American Express and say, "Wow, this is a screaming value today." You know, the other side, and I'd be on this other side, would be looking at that and thinking this very well could be kind of a bit of a value trap here, in that I'm not really debating the fact that it's a relevant business, but I don't think it's nearly as relevant as it used to be. And honestly, I very much question leadership at this point, and I'll get into that in a minute. But I mean, when I look at, you know, what is happening with American Express, I mean, this is good news for American Express cardholders, and I'm an Amex cardholder. This means that the company really should be upping their game and really trying to ramp up their customer service to levels that will keep cardholders coming back for more, because right now they need every cardholder they can get, apparently. I've always been happy with it as a card. I've never been an American Express investor, and I don't think I ever will be. Or at least not now. I mean, historically, American Express has been able to command higher pricing from their merchants based on the logic that their cardholders spend more and charge more often. And maybe that used to be the case. But I think as technology is wont to do, It has brought more parity to the masses in much more quickly as time goes on. So there are more cards. There are more options. We have mobile payments really growing very quickly. So, I mean, I think there are more and more options out there than ever before. And I think that, you know, merchants out there are losing any real incentive to say, yes, I'll go ahead and take American Express and pay you more for that because your cardholders are going to buy here more often and spend more money. That's just not the same case. This is a while back when you and I know we had read that article that sort of talked about the Costco-American Express relationship and kind of how everything went down there.
The breakup.
Yeah, we both we walked away with sort of the same impression there in regard to leadership at American Express. And it sounded like Ken Chenault, maybe there's a culture problem there. Maybe they think a little bit more highly of themselves than they should. But it seemed like you had two opposite ends of the spectrum there in Costco, sort of the everyday blue collar kind of American publicly traded company with American Express that really they kind of saw themselves as somewhat presidential from what it looked like.
Yeah.
I mean, they brought people in early to sort of dictate routes on where he would go in and out of the building and making sure there were going to be these types of refreshments and a bathroom nearby and yada, yada, yada. It just got out of hand. So, I mean, I got to question a business like that where they if they think that highly of themselves. You know, obviously, this is a business they're facing some serious headwinds here, and I don't think they're necessarily going to be in the driver's seat here anytime soon.
So the fact that Amex is falling to a 2.5-year low today does not get you interested in the stock as long as that leadership is still there.
As long as that leadership's there, no, I don't. You know, for me, because again, I mean, it's a obviously very relevant business with a large installed base of cardholders out there. Granted, that base is going to get a little bit smaller. But again, I don't know what the catalyst is to turn this thing around, particularly as long as you know, current leadership remains.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Let's hope the second trading day of the market is going to be a little bit better than today.
I'm willing to make this promise right here and now.
Okay.
We will see better days in 2016.
Hopefully we won't see worse. As always, people on the program may have interest in the stocks they talk about, and the Motley Fool may have formal recommendations for or against. So don't buy or sell stocks based solely on what you hear. That's going to do it for this edition of Market Foolery. The show is mixed by Dan Boyd. I'm Chris Hill. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.